Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. And Katie, this is going to be fantastic.
It is.
You know why this is going to be fantastic?
Because it's High Velocity Radio and it's Wednesday.
And we're talking about your favorite subject, money.
How did you know?
It's all about wealth.
Yes.
Accumulating wealth.
Uh-huh.
That's all you think about 24/7.
All the time. Right. That's it.
That and CrossFit. Those
yes.
two things.
Those are the only two things I ever think about.
All right. So we're going to kick off the show. We got Eric Schimpf, and he's with Merrill Lynch. He's the managing director of the Southeast Division. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your role at Merrill Lynch. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so live here in Atlanta with my family. And as you mentioned, I'm the Southeastern Division director. So I'm responsible for really everything Merrill Lynch does in the Southeastern United States.
How many states is that?
It's about nine states.
Nine.
4,500 people,
so
teammates that are fantastic.
Now, how do you manage nine states? Like, does every state have its own kind of little quirkiness?
Or yeah, so I divide it up. So I've got great leaders that work for me. You know, the territories divided up, you know, kind of geographically, as you would think. I have to have a place to sleep. So my family and my kids live here in Atlanta, but I spend a lot of time on the road.
Now, so now what's your role? Are you the sales manager? You're giving them the vision of what you want them to do? What are you trying to help
them
accomplish?
Yeah, probably a little bit of everything. I mean, my responsibilities really are the entire Southeast. So anything the firm does, from setting strategy, tactics, marketing, where we sit, the branding, the human resources functions, everything that we do from a firm, you know, is really in the end my responsibility, and just out there really trying to help as many people as we can.
Well, then let's talk about Merrill Lynch. What is kind of, how would you define the brand of Merrill Lynch?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic brand. Again, I get to work with some wonderful people. Our job is just really to help clients, you know, and with the power of not only Merrill Lynch, but being part of Bank of America, right? Mm-hmm. So the broader enterprise, you know, we really have this mission and vision of, you know, we really believe that we can make the financial lives of people better through the power of connection. So someone might start with Merrill Lynch. It might be something simple as college planning, retirement planning, looking to, you know, buy a second home. But then with the power of the broader enterprise, you know, wonderful consumer bank, small business lending, all the other things that the enterprise does, just really trying to help people out at all walks of life, young, old, and doing a good job for people.
So now let's drill down to the Merrill Lynch person, the boots on the ground in any given market. Their job is to go and serve their community, to get to know the people in the community, to help them kind of stabilize the financial side of their lives.
Yeah, listen, again, we're happy to work with anybody and everybody. And the entry point can be all over, from young people fresh out of school all the way to, you know, some older people that have maybe already retired. But to literally be on the ground in the community, you know, we used to have this saying, you know, bringing Wall Street to Main Street is
right.
What we did. And so 160 some offices throughout the southern part of the United States, really trying to be ingrained in the community, as
like
you mentioned.
Like good corporate citizens serving the community in the way that that specific community needs to be served.
Yeah, I'll brag on the folks here in Atlanta. You know, again, my home is here, but in 2017, over 55,000 volunteer hours that we put into the community as part of the broader Bank of America mm-hmm. organization. The Bank of America Foundation, which we participate in, gave over $2 million, you know, to needy and deserving organizations here in Atlanta. So replicating that throughout the Southeastern United States. And really, like you said, I'll use your term, you know, boots on the ground, having a wonderful brand, just trying to help people out.
Now, you mentioned the different, segments of your prospects or the people you serve. Let's go through them, kind of some of them at least. You mentioned right out of college. So now a person graduates college. What would be the reason to start now a relationship with a Merrill Lynch a person?
Yeah, you know, coming fresh out of college might be a time that they're entering the workforce
right.
for the first time. Might be thinking about, you know, buying a first home, renting an apartment, buying a car, something like that. So some really simple, basic financial needs. But as the world gets more complex, as things become more expensive, the need for planning really kicks in at an earlier age. So you have to start making decisions now that I truly think could impact decisions you make when you're 30, 40, 50,
right, because
60.
There's a huge benefit of starting that young is that you can get leverage that power of compounding, right? The sooner you start that machine working for you, the better, isn't it?
You know, one of the greatest concepts out there, right? The idea of compounding interest. And I was fortunate, you know, I sort of grew up in the business. My father worked for Merrill Lynch and was a financial advisor. And I can remember him asking me, you know, in a fatherly way, almost a demand to save a portion of my first check, you know, my first job there at McDonald's, saying, no, Dad, I needed that money for the movies or a concert or something like that. And, you know, now I look back as a 50-year-old guy, the savings that my father taught me to do helped me buy my first home when it came time. So I couldn't agree more. The idea of starting early and, you know, tucking a few things away and letting compounding interest work out for you.
So if somebody is in their first job out of college, it makes sense to have a conversation or to reach out to a Merrill Lynch person to have at least kind of begin a relationship to say, look, I don't have a lot of money. I don't know what I'm doing. It's worth to just start a relationship just to kind of maybe build the foundation.
That's exactly where we would like it to start. You know, starting out with just a conversation, having someone come in, sit with us, asking a little bit about their hopes, their dreams, their desires, and just giving them some things to think about. And that relationship then over time, hopefully will, you know, evolve. And Merrill Lynch might not be the right place at the beginning. It might be as simple as, you know, letting us introduce you to the enterprise and starting a savings account or a simple credit card with one of our colleagues at the broader bank. But we would love to have that opening conversation and then let it develop over time.
And then what are some of the things, even a person shouldn't feel intimidated that they don't have a lot of wealth at this time to begin a conversation, right? Because you have people that are okay with just educating people. And like you said, it may or may not be the right fit, but you're people are there to serve in terms of just sharing information.
Yeah, truly believe in this idea of planning and truly believe in this idea of sharing and educating, because we know if we do a good job of that and the relationship is built and trust is established, people continue to come back. And when they have those moments in life, marriage, first child being born, second job, time to save for retirement. You know, I have a son who just finished his freshman year at college. You know, the cost of college 18 years from now, when a child is born this year, it's a major financial decision that's going to need to be planned for. And so we would love to have those conversations and welcome people back.
Okay. So now we've talked about a little bit about how that person right out of college can get involved with Merrill Lynch. How about the person that is maybe, like you mentioned, you're around 50, you're working, maybe this person's been working and now they're thinking, you know what, I think either I was downsized or I'm going to have a shift in my career. Maybe I'm going to do my own thing. Is that a place for a conversation?
Yeah, again, I would bring it back to that idea of conversation. You think of somebody 50 years old, maybe thinking about a second career. You know, we see a tremendous amount of people deciding to go back to school to get educated again, to become entrepreneurs for the first time, start a small business, travel the world, buy that second home. There's just a lot of decisions that, again, need to be made. And again, I really believe in this idea of planning will allow you to have more choice over time. You know, a little late to think about retirement when you're ready to go for retirement.
Right.
You know, hopefully you've had some of that thought. If you're in that age of 50 years old, maybe you're leaving a job for the first time, the likelihood that there's a pension or a 401k plan or something at your previous employer, you should have an education and a discussion around those so you can make great decisions. And again, we'd love to have that conversation.
And then why don't you educate some of the folks about what it's like when you have a relationship with a Merrill Lynch person and they're serving you and you're working with them? Are you checking in every quarter, every year, every month? Like, what is the rhythm of kind of these checkups? Because like you said, life events happen, you know, oh, we're going to have a kid. Oh, my kid's going to have to go to college in 5 years, or, oh, I'm going to retire in 10 years, or I want to save for a vacation. Do you really help your kind of quarterback my financial life, or what?
I think quarterback is a great term for it, you know, and we want that relationship to really be mutually driven. So maybe up front, this idea of establishing trust and understanding people's goals and education maybe is a little bit more up front, but the ultimate desire being, you know, letting the client decide, hey, do you want to speak to us monthly, quarterly? We'd love to be that first phone call when there is an event. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, a life event, a marriage, a child being born, leaving a job, you know, our hope would be that we're kind of the first phone call that you would make, and it would be fluid. At a minimum, just as an investor, I would recommend that everybody check in kind of at least quarterly to see what's going on and see, you know, how are you doing? But if you've built a plan, let that plan dictate how you feel you're doing. Are you saving towards retirement? Are you saving towards education? Are you saving towards that second home? And let that plan and the results kind of dictate the relationship.
Now, how do you kind of manage the expectations of your clients in terms of the volatility of just economic, the world that we live in? You know, like you'll read headlines every, you know, any given day that there's turmoil and, the sky is falling. Or you'll read other headlines that, oh my God, everybody's making a fortune. And you're like, I'm not making a fortune. Well, like I'm being left behind here.
Yeah, we're kind of in that day and age, right? Where every day you kind of wake up and something's out there in the news that seems to affecting the markets. And even more so, it's just not about the markets here in the U.S. I mean, it's the planet, it's the globe. Things that are going on around the world will impact, investors here, specifically in Atlanta. I would bring it back to that idea of having an educated plan and a relationship with someone to let them help you through turmoil. You know, does what's going on day to day really matter to you if your goal is a children's education and the children is 1 year old and it's 17 years away from when they need that money? I like to bring the discussion back, and our advisors like to bring it back to what is the purpose of the money that's invested and what's the goal and the time frame around that? And if you think about that, you can almost take away that short-term volatility in the day-to-day and really encourage people to go on and enjoy their lives and enjoy the things they're doing.
So they don't have to stress about anything that's happening in the news if you have kind of a long-term view on things.
If you're stressing about day-to-day movement in the market, I might suggest have a conversation with someone to understand why is that day-to-day movement causing you stress and angst. It might be you're taking more risk than you think you should. You haven't measured the time frame of your goal. Because I think if risk is understood, your time frame is understood, the day-to-day movements in the market really shouldn't impact your day-to-day movement.
Because you should be adjusting your plan according to that life stage you're in.
And that's a big part, to your earlier question, how does that relationship evolve with the financial advisor? The plan is not a one-time set and done thing.
It's not a set and forget it and then just show up 20 years later and go, okay, where's my money?
It's a living, breathing thing, if you would have asked my wife and I, we probably would have had two children. Well, we end up having three, right? So you have to have a living, breathing plan. You take on second jobs, homes, you move, the world moves around with you. So don't let that plan become static.
Right. And that's why you should check in and make adjustments periodically.
Correct. And hopefully we're doing a good job with reaching out, wonderful technology, client-facing technology. Mm-hmm. People are busy, so sometimes they want to log in and see what's going on at 2 in the morning work.
That's what you have, a whole suite of technology at your disposal that they can kind of access all this information and even probably get in touch with people 24/7 at this point, right?
No doubt that, we're there. And the tools, whether it's sitting in our office, us sitting at your kitchen table, or using our online and mobile applications to keep in touch with us, it's almost 24/7.
Do you have, as part of the technology, are there things that I can model kind of what ifs and future things based on where I'm at or where I'd like to go?
Yeah, there's calculators out there and tools that allow you to aggregate all of your assets. So you might have some assets here. You might have some credit card bills and some other things and some loans at other places. Some basic tools that allow you to kind of...
Like a dashboard.
Get a picture, right? A dashboard would be a great term for it. That really then becomes the beginning of that relationship discussion or that plan.
Now, when you mentioned that the community is important in all the different areas that you serve, what are some examples of how, like you mentioned, the donation of volunteering and time, but maybe some specifics of like how Merrill Lynch, like an office of yours, would go into a community and like serve? Is it always kind of the needy? Is it kind of the business community? Are you active like in the chambers of commerce? Are you like?
I think it's all over the board. And what we try and do, and as the leader, what I try and support is employee choice. What's important to you? What's important to your families? What's important to your clients?
And so aligning their kind of interests and passions with the company's overarching philosophy. Yeah,
correct. Because when you have that passion and you're naturally interested in something, I think it's much easier to have an impact and volunteer. So, across the board, employees that I work with, from the arts to homelessness to children's hospitals to just about everything you can do. And I'm proud of the fact just about every weekend I can find the brand or the logo, out there somewhere. And hopefully they're doing it in conjunction with clients and family members. And we really try and represent really what the client wants to stand for. And hopefully in my role, I can back it up with some financial support and some manpower support as well.
Now, when you're Merrill Lynch is a known brand out there, how are you kind of combating some of these millennial issues of using these apps and these kind of, you know, set it and forget it robo solutions?
I look at it two ways. One, I have to be competitive in the space. So I'm proud of the mobile applications and internet interfaces that we have, not only at Merrill Lynch, but again, the broader, you know, the broader bank. But I also come back to kind of some of our earlier comments, this idea of having a plan. I don't think necessarily set it and forget it is going to work. We talked about daily turmoil. We talked about the globe impacting investors. We talked about major financial decisions, the cost of what college is going to be 18 years from today. I just take a stance. Those aren't kind of set it and forget it things. You need advice at appropriate times.
You need human advice.
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how have you seen the industry evolve since you started? You're kind of a lifer in Merrill Lynch.
I am, hard to believe. But, you know, it's really changed for me. Maybe when I started out in the early 90s, it was so much about individual performance of a portfolio. And then we kind of ran through, you know, what went on in Silicon Valley in the middle and late 90s with the tech bubble and all those things. To really now, if I've done a good job explaining and people understand that this financial plan, and things are hard, right? To plan for retirement, to plan for education, to plan for a second home or vacation or wedding of children or those things. It's expensive and it's complicated. And it affects everything you do, from how you might save for retirement at work, how you might negotiate a job or a salary at something, decisions that you might make around buying a second car because it could be expensive. And so it's just not about an individual performance on a stock portfolio. Your savings account matters. Your interest rate on your credit card matters. The mortgage rate on your home loan matters. And I think, again, Merrill Lynch being part of the broader Bank of America enterprise allows us to have all of those kind of areas covered. Definitely stock performance is a part of it, but understanding kind of all the other financial things that impact you are really important.
Now, how do you get involved with the client of yours that's the business owner? And you mentioned those kind of other access to other resources mm-hmm. outside of Merrill Lynch. Are you a good partner for business owners in terms of, hey, your business is over here and it's part of a portfolio? That could be, that's, you could look at it in some ways as that's one stock in your portfolio. And for some small business people, that could be a very speculative stock in their portfolio, but it's still a contributor. Do you kind of get involved and say, okay, you know what, because we have relationship with Bank of America, then let's talk about the loan. Maybe you need a loan here. Or do you kind of have a holistic view of that, of the whole relationship when it comes to banking as investment?
I think you've got it right, Lee. So for a lot of business owners, I mean, it is the largest piece of their portfolio. It is the largest activity in their life that's, you know, from a Merrill Lynch standpoint, you know, we would encourage and help, you know, small business owner develop a financial plan for that business, just much like we would an individual personal financial plan, thinking about things like retirement plans for their employees, interest rate on your checking account for your small business. So some of the things that we could do at Merrill Lynch, and then broadening that out. Are you in need of merchant services? Are you a business that takes credit cards right. as a way of transaction? Well, then bringing in one of our consumer bank partners. Are you a business that's growing and maybe you need a loan to grow and to build and bring in inventory? So again, a very natural way for us to kind of holistically take care of a small business client, have a great Merrill Lynch relationship, and then allow us to introduce them to the other parts of the organization. And we're actually seeing it the other way now as well. So a small business owner that might already have a Bank of America relationship is now in need of retirement planning, key man planning, things like that, making an introduction to us at Merrill Lynch.
So it's very symbiotic.
Correct. And again, it all comes back to, again, the mission of the broader enterprise to make the financial lives of our clients better through the power of connection.
So is your typical client an individual, or are they business owners, or it's a combination?
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's a combination of, you know, individuals, business owners, young, old, middle age. I mean, it's really across the board, and I'm proud. It's what we're doing and what we're designed to do. Be out there, as you said at the introduction, being on the ground, helping people take care of their financial needs.
But when you're client base is so broad, how do you communicate with them and attract new ones? If you can serve everybody, then it's sometimes from a marketing standpoint, it's hard to serve anyone.
It really comes down to then, I think, the individual expertise of the financial advisor. So I mentioned, roughly 4,500 people that I get to work with here in the Southeastern United States. Each individual financial advisor might have a niche or an area that is attractive to them, might be really interested in focusing on small business owners, might be really interested in focusing on retirees. So letting that individual financial advisor dictate where he or she wants to develop a relationship, and a lot of that relationship then comes through referrals. People, clients like themselves,
sure,
hang out with clients like themselves and send them our way. My job as the leader, making sure that we're competitive strategically with solutions and tactics to make sure that that individual advisor has everything that they need.
So when you're working with the individual advisor and you're kind of helping them with their portfolio of clients, no matter whatever that niche might be, are you sharing with them best practices of, hey, you're going after business owners. Hey, this worked really well in South Carolina. Have you thought about this? Or is there sharing like that?
Yeah, it's a big part of what I do, sharing best practices, sharing ideas from around the country, things that I've seen in the role that I do. Spend a lot of time helping people build teams. So often an individual financial advisor isn't just one person, it's a financial advisory team. So
right,
it might be 2, 3, 4 financial advisors who have come together, a great set of support underneath them from client associates and analysts, really helping them understand the dynamic, going back to maybe something we talked about earlier. It's just not about individual stock performance
anymore. Right. Well, it has to be framed larger than that, because it can't be about that only, because there's too many needs and it's too complex of an equation you're dealing with.
So we really look at it, we kind of, engage clients almost as a team, mm-hmm, of people coming to help.
Now, is each individual Merrill Lynch advisor, are they independent contractors or their employees? Is it their own business? What is the framework?
No, everybody's an employee, of the firm. And they have their clients and their support system and teams around them. But, they do it under the Merrill Lynch brand.
And then your role is to help each of them individually and collectively kind of live up to the mission of Merrill Lynch.
Yeah. I mean, my day to day, again, being responsible for the Southeast United States, having it broken up kind of geographically. So there's 18 markets that make up, the Southeastern United States in terms of, the Merrill Lynch map.
Right.
I spent a lot of time with the leaders, those 18 leaders and those individuals, making sure they're trained, their foot or their hand is on the pulse of what's going on. What do the advisors need there?
What are some of the things they say we need more of usually?
We might need more support in the field. It might be we would love to do some local advertising. As you can imagine, pretty highly regulated industry. As regulations change, wanting to have solutions that meet client needs. And so a big part of my job is really representing the employees and the clients of the Southeastern United States back to the firm in terms of strategic direction, saying, hey, this is what we need. This is what, I'd like to have kind of being the interface between the Southeastern United States and the organization.
And then what's the most rewarding part of the job for you?
I love traveling and being out there and being on the field and working with people. But this stuff really works. And sometimes it takes some time.
What's this stuff mean?
The things that we talked about. Having a financial plan, it really does work. It just takes time. So as we talked a little bit about a child wanting to go to college someday. That child born today, it's 18 years until they go to college, 18, 19 years, something like that. Not a day goes by where I don't get a thank you or an email or a note saying, it worked. The financial plan we embarked on 20 years ago allowed my son or daughter to go to college. The financial plan we embarked on, it allowed us to retire and we were able to buy the second home at the beach and do what we wanted to do. When I see that we've really lived up to the mission, that we've helped people, and advisors are being thanked. It's just a great feeling for me being out there and helping people.
Now, what was it like for you having grown up in the Merrill Lynch kind of family when it came time to choose directions? Like what led you to stay the course there? And where was the rebellious Eric saying, yeah, that was good for you, Dad, but I'm going to go over here.
Yeah, I don't know if that guy ever showed up. you know, I went to school. I went to West Point. So I went to the military academy. And as soon as I graduated, I spent some time as an Army officer. And I literally left the Army on a Friday and started at Merrill Lynch on a Monday.
But was that the plan going in?
No, it really wasn't. And, you know, I kind of did all that without telling my father. So I called him one day and said, hey, guess what?
He didn't know you were going to West Point?
He knew that part. Yeah, that part was kind of obvious. It just wasn't the short hair that gave it away. But I can call him and went and interviewed and did it all on my own. No doubt, you know, him as a role model and watching what he did had an impact on me.
But what attracted you to it after going through West Point and lived kind of the Army life for a while? What was it that said, you know what, I'm going to go back to this that I've seen my dad?
You know, really the entrepreneurial spirit, right? The ability to go out there and build something, you know, helping people, but really, you know, finding a role that if you invested your time into it and you worked hard, you know, have a chance to work with an amazing brand, an amazing set of people, an amazing set of tools, just to have that opportunity to go do it. Was out in California, studied computer science at school. Early 90s in Silicon Valley was kind of a great place to be.
You were with Merrill Lynch at that time?
I was. And
Your prism of seeing that world was through the eyes of a Merrill Lynch person?
Yeah, because if you think back to kind of early 90s, middle 90s and that part of California.
A lot of stuff was happening.
A lot of stuff going on, right? And I think I could look at it two ways. I understood the technology, being right. educated in computer science, but I also understood the financial need, the desire.
But you never got the bug of, there's all these startups. That's the beginning of the startup.
Maybe that's as far as my rebellion got. That was probably dad in the back of my head saying, nah, you're
there
more of a
no
suit and tie kind of guy.
Nobody was like, hey, you can, here, get on the ground floor. We got three guys.
Yeah, there was maybe some of that, but, you know, it just
you stayed in your lane.
I did. I stayed in my lane, and, you know, Merrill Lynch has then allowed me to move around the country and live all over the place, and it's just been fantastic.
So what was the closest you came? Any startups that turned into mega companies that you could have been involved in at that time?
No, but I can remember things like eBay and Yahoo and those things going public.
Because that was at the beginning.
Yeah, sure. It was at the beginning of it, and got to work with some wonderful clients that worked in those places.
So you were involved at the start of kind of the whole Silicon Valley, that part
middle.
Of the growth.
How about the middle?
Well,
yeah.
It was kind of early on the thing. I mean, I don't want to date you here, but that was kind of the early stages.
It was great to see and really... Just, you know,
it was
again,
exciting time,
Yahoo
though.
And eBay and right. seeing those things start out with 20 people become the companies they've become today. So right. really cool.
And now they're hundreds of thousands of employees, some of those firms.
Huge.
Now.
Yeah, great.
So now what's next for you?
I literally feel like I've got the dream job. You know, I love it here. Again, I talked about my home is here in Atlanta. I've got two more children to kind of get through school.
You got a good plan though. So
I do. Yeah.
Worried.
Hopefully, knock on wood, things come out for me. But again, I travel a bunch. I just want to keep going. It's great.
So now, here in Atlanta, what do you need more of?
Well, it's kind of interesting. You know, right now I wish it was cooler, but 4 months ago I wish it was hotter.
It's hotter.
So we're kind of in that weather. You know, Atlanta is a very important market, you know, for Merrill Lynch. And we're always out there hiring and looking for people.
So you're looking for talent?
Always looking for talent and helping.
Who's a good prospect for talent? Is it the person right out of college, or you want the experienced advisor that may be considering changing teams?
Probably a little bit of both, right? I put ourselves out there, and I hope the brand represents the employer of choice in financial services in the city of Atlanta. And if that's someone fresh out of school that wants to come be a trainee and get educated, happy to do it. If it's somebody that's already in the business and says, you know what, the technology, the tools, the platform, the leadership is really attractive to me, I'd love to have those conversations with those people too.
And then for clients that are looking to maybe switch financial advisors, what's the compelling reason to make the change at Merrill Lynch?
Hopefully some of the things that we've been talking about, you know, I'm lucky. I get to work with some of the greatest financial advisors literally on the planet every day, especially here in the city of Atlanta. No other firm in my mind has the capabilities that we do. If you truly believe that it's just not about stock performance, it's those other things that are going to matter as you make those financial decisions. Bank of America as an enterprise and all the things that we can do and all the capabilities that we can deliver, regardless of how you want to interface with us, again, in person at the kitchen table or through technology, it's it's the only compelling case to make.
And if somebody went to learn more, what's the website?
ML.com.
ML.com, and then they can drill down to their region and find a local person or...
Correct. Search for us, type in a zip code, find us, and we'd love to have a conversation with you.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
No, thanks for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.